time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. I've got a topic today that intrigues geologists all over the world. Today, it's about the power of the volcano. So we're going to talk all about volcanoes today. I'll tell you a couple cool stories, as usual. And what I will share with you is the geology behind how volcanoes form, how they happen. This show was brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Well, first thing we need to know is, well, there's two types of volcano. The one type of volcano is the one that everyone, you see it on the news all the time. They're showing you things from around the world. And these are the explosive volcanoes. And probably because of their power, that's what demands, I guess, a lot of attention from the news. And the other one are the quiet volcanoes. And some of you have seen some of the quiet flows we sometimes see associated with Hawaii. And these are almost these lava flows that are just coming down the hill, sometimes at a good speed, but it's just flowing down the hill versus that explosive type. So we're going to figure out, okay, so what drives a volcano and what makes it work? So your answer today would be a volcano is driven by, how about gases? Gases is what drives that volcano. The number one type of gas is water vapor. Now, I'm going to talk about baking a cake for a few minutes. And you're going to go, what do you mean baking a cake in a volcano? How could the two be linked together? I'm going to show you. So if you were to tell me all the different things that you would put in to bake a cake from scratch, because if I say to bake a cake, some people say, oh, yeah, you just add water and you mix. See, I know that you make fake cakes and don't invite me over. I'm not even a sweet. Oh, I'm a sweet guy, but I don't eat a lot of sweets. Those are the fake cakes from scratch. Well, then you'd put in some eggs and you put in whether it be butter or oil. All right. Depends on what type of fat you're going to put in there. And you'd put in your flour and you would just go on your sugar and all your different, your flavoring, if you're chocolate, whatever. And you have all these. And then, okay, so how do you mix it? Well, there's all different ways in which you could mix it. You could actually take a spoon. You could take a whisk. You could take a, you know, an electric type of Mixmaster beater or whatever. And the list goes on and on. Well, let's now take, instead of a cake mix, let's take a magma mix and let's go under the earth. So if you were going to say, okay, so what's in a magma mix? Because for a volcano, we're going to have to get some molten rock, some melted rock below the earth's surface. Well, if you think about it in terms of this, and this sounds pretty crazy. I always describe it this way. Minerals, they like to hang out with each other. People, what do you mean minerals hanging out? Typically, where you find one type of mineral, you'll find other specific minerals near around the earth. And that's pretty neat. So let's, instead of a cake mix, take a magma mix and let's create some granite. All right. You know, some of you have granite countertops in your kitchen, very expensive, very beautiful. And let's figure out, well, what are they made up of? And for it to be granite, you've got to have these three different types of minerals inside that mix. You got to have to have quartz, and there's many different types of quartz, whether you have rosy or milky or clear, and let's go on and on. And the second one is biotite. And biotite's a real cool mineral because it is a mineral that if I had a sheet here, I would just be able to peel it in sheets, and it almost looks like plastic. It's a pretty cool one. And then the third one is potassium feldspar. Geologists call it K-spar because on the periodic table of elements, potassium is K. So if you're the real geologist out there and we're talking K-spar, you know exactly what I'm speaking about. Well, you now have these minerals in the mix. Well, you had a cake mix, and I said, okay, so what did you mix it with? So now let's figure out, okay, so what mixes the magma? Because again, this magma is under the earth in a magma mix. Some people would say a pool of magma below the earth's surface. So what mixes it? And the answer is convection currents. Convection currents, most people associate convection currents with weather outside and local weather where you have warm air rising, cold air settling, but it doesn't have to be air. It's anything that's warm or cool settling. An example I can give you is if you happen to have one of these psychedelic lava lamps And no, there's not real lava inside of there now that we're talking volcanoes. There's paraffin, there's wax inside of it. And if you watch it, and as you see it heat up, so you turned it on, you're watching it, and all of a sudden it starts to move, and you see these globs that are rising and some that are falling at the same time. Well, what's happening is the light bulb at the bottom, the heat source is causing some of that wax to get heated. And remember, heat rises, it's lighter, it's less dense, it goes up. And then as it gets to the top of the lava lamp, it gets cooler. And it's crazy. If you were to measure in degrees, it's probably 1 degree from top to bottom on that. But that's still enough to cause it to be colder because everything is relative now. And that's why it settles down. And you can actually watch a convection current occurring. Well, what happens? We have heat from the center of the Earth. And as it's coming up into a hot spot on the Earth and it's heating up some of the magma, well, the magma on the bottom, and we'll get to temps later on, the magma on the bottom is warmer, hotter than the magma on the top. So you get a convection current. So you now have warm, rising, cold, settling. So this magma mix, and let's go back to our mix of granite, is being mixed. So you've got your quartz, your biotite, your K-spar being mixed up. Well, if the heat begins to shut off, and this is a cool thing about the Earth, you know, certain areas, the heat will actually shut off. It might be 1,000 years from now. It could be 1,000,000 years from now. But when it shuts off, if it shuts off below the Earth's surface, well, we've just created an igneous type of rock, and that'd be intrusive inside the Earth. And we've created a rock, and that's really what granite is. It's cooled inside the Earth. And as things get weathered away, you will actually then see, so you have some of the rock or soil material around the outsides of it that was never part of the magma mix over millions of years. As it gets weathered away, that's how you start to see these huge slabs of granite. Well, let's figure out then why we have some explosive volcanoes and why we have some quiet volcanoes. Well, in the magma mix, the minerals, consider it like if you were going to interlock your hands, you put them together. And if you interlock them real tight, all right, think about that as the magma mix where it's going to hold the gases in. And if it holds the gases in, that's how you actually get an explosive volcano. We call that felsic lava, all right? There's different names for the different lava mixes. And if it holds it in, it's going to hold up. And if you're holding in the gases, well, what do you build up? You build up pressure. Pressure over time is what causes these great explosive volcanoes. Well, the opposite is true. If I said interlock your hands, but not tightly, and you looked, and between your fingers, you saw little spaces. Well, then gases could slowly escape. We call that mafic lava. And the mafic lava is that quiet volcano where it slowly comes out, the slow flows. So, you know, we just spoke about, okay, so what do you mix it? How do you mix it? So now we've got this mix going on. And if it was going to come out onto the Earth, well, there's got to be a way in which it is now going from the, we'll call it the magma mix below the Earth's surface, and it now has to go to, the Earth's surface. And, well, how does it get there? You should also know that this show is brought to you by Tranquility Mountain Backpacks, and you can actually see the new Joey B. Signature Series backpacks. Go to TranquilityMountain.com, where adventures begin. Now, so it can get out to the top, there is a fissure, a crack in the ground, and this is a crack in the ground where the lava will come out. So when it comes out, it's going to come out onto the Earth's surface. So let's figure out if it happened to be a quiet one, and we'll use that example. Well, rock melts at about 500 degrees F, and the max it'll go to is about 3,000 degrees F. And because sometimes people will see some, you know, you'll see lava, say it's a Hawaiian flow, and you see it coming down, and it's not glowing. Well, once again, you have different temps, and then you see some of the actually, think about this. It's magma below the Earth's surface. Once it comes out, we call it lava. So on the Earth's surface, you have lava flow coming down, and it's glowing red. Well, again, it's getting toward the higher end of that temp range. So as things come out, sometimes they will actually cool very quickly. Sometimes they cool very slowly. And your lava, when it becomes an igneous rock at that point in time, takes on different textures, different looks. And I'll give you a couple examples of some that you probably know, some of you have heard of, some of you have said maybe in your geology class in high school and college, but some of you may just find these along the beach somewhere. And the first one is basalt. And basalt is made on the ocean floor. And you know what? Basalt gives us a cool, I guess it gives us a cool look at the Earth's past, the Earth's history. And I give you a neat example. We had met up in New Mexico. I just finished some of my research, met up with a friend out there, and she was driving us onto an area with some petroglyphs. And in this area of New Mexico, mountainous region, I look out and I see this peak, not tall, but I see this peak, and I go, wow, that's basalt, man. That's so cool. This was once the ocean floor. And the people in the car are going, you can't know that. You can't know that's basalt. You can't. I said, look, I said, basalt is made on the ocean floor. That's basalt. And by the way, that mountain peak I saw, that little mound I saw, was about 30, 40 miles away. But I could see the color of it. And sometimes, because basalt has a couple of different shades, we'll call it that way. And if you ever poured, like, if you know what your motor oil, your car oil looks like when it's dirty, and if you ever, like, were to pour that on a rock and it gets a little shiny, one of the colors of basalt looks just like that. So we are actually traveling in that area. We get over there. I said, pull over the car. Get out. I said, this is basalt. This is once the ocean floor. And people are like, and number one, they're amazed at me. And by the way, I'm not amazing. I'm just like spitting out a fact that I know and I happen to be able to see it. But that's one of the cool things about basalt. You can prove that. So think about this. New Mexico, it's not near the coast. It was once the ocean floor. When you look at things like obsidian, people call it volcanic glass because it cools so quickly. It gets this real hard, shiny look to it because no oxygen's trapped inside of it. And probably the two that you know, some of you that have fish tanks and you go to a fish store and it looks like a reddish rock that they're, and they've actually carved the hole out of it. And you put this rock in it so your fish could swim through the hole and out and around. And that's scoria. And the other one is pumice. And you probably, some of you know that pumice, it floats. And you go, well, how could a rock float? Well, these things cool and they trap oxygen molecules inside of it. And they trap so many oxygen molecules inside of it that they are so light. Scoria, not as light as pumice. But the cool thing about scoria, you can probably deal with pumice, but the cool thing about scoria is you could, you know, the same way you put a sponge under a faucet and you could do it slowly and water would drip into the sponge and the sponge would just keep absorbing and absorbing. Obviously, there's going to reach a saturation point. Scoria would do the same thing because of all those empty spaces, the oxygen molecules that were trapped inside of there. You can fill that rock with water. By the way, if you do this, it will probably take months for it to dry out. If you have a piece of pumice, because it cools so rapidly and traps the outside of it, it is so sharp. I mean, like it is, if you were to rub, because some of you are going, well, I have a pumice stone for, you know, so they sell them in beauty supply stores under this. Number one, is it real pumice? Because we got man-made stuff going on now, but the real pumice, sharp rock, need to be careful of it. So I thought I'd take you on a journey, and this journey would say, okay, let's now go back to what volcanoes, and you know, remember at the beginning of the show, I said the power of volcanoes. So I'm going to talk to you about one of the most powerful volcanoes that have ever erupted on the Earth's surface. So let's go out to the west coast of the United States. Let's go into the Cascade Mountain Ranges. And you know, really neat, many years ago, I'm flying out there. Actually, it was past college, so I played a little past college. And I'm flying out there and I'm going to land in the state of Washington. And all of a sudden you're looking at the Cascade Mountain Range and you're looking at some really beautiful places, Mount Rainier and all this, glaciated. And then you see Mount St. Helens, can't even talk. I'm probably so excited about it, but it's Mount St. Helens. And Mount St. Helens is this just really, really cool area. And while there was a time when all of a sudden Mount St. Helens, we sometimes call them dormant volcanoes. Sometimes people will say they're sleeping volcanoes. And all of a sudden, it began to wake up. Well, I don't think you want to, like, you know, go into a grizzly bear den and wake him up. I probably couldn't wake him up anyway because they're really slow. And I do some shows on bears because I've done some research out there on grizzly bears. So anyway, this guy began to wake up. And the magma mix was 60 miles below the Earth's surface. And it had that felsic lava. So right away, we knew that this is an explosive type of volcano because it's just a cool thing. If you know what type of magma is below, then you know what type of volcano. So when it began to wake up, that felsic lava, that lava mix began to hold in the gases. And if it's holding in the gases, well, then guess what? You then know that it's going to be an explosive one. Well, we have tracked eruptions in there dating back to 1900 BC. And again, we can always date rocks. And no, dating rocks does not mean you take them to the movies. Dating rocks means that we can tell the carbon in the rock, and we can do carbon dating, and we can tell the exact age of rocks. Well, as it began to give us signs that it was going to erupt, the geologists went out there, and when they went out there, and on all the mountains around it, including St. Helens, but all the mountains around it, Rainier and all the other mountains, they began to set up all these meters. They put on some seismometers, and just like it sounds, it's recording the frequency, the location of the area. This is really what it's doing, geometers, and it's basically using laser beams because you want to measure the ground. Is the ground moving? Is it swelling? Tilt meters. Does it follow the changes of the slope of it? You know, we had these gas sensors because gases were escaping, and we wanted to figure that out. And then stream gauges, and it's recording water temps and pH levels because some the gases that are given off, some volcanoes are acidic. So we want to see if there are any changes there. Well, there came a point when we knew it was going to blow, when we knew it was going to be big because of the signs that was, given off. And with those signs that were given off, we had a mandatory evacuation. And throughout American history, we have had a mandatory evacuations. And the word mandatory is supposed to mean mandatory, got to. Well, in a lot of these mandatory evacuations, not just with volcanoes, some with hurricanes, and it causes problems for our first responders, which, guess what? We should not be putting them in jeopardy because of you. Well, they were asking people to leave the mountain, and there was this old gentleman. Matter of fact, there's actually a pretty cool movie called St. Helens, made a jillion years ago, and I'm not a big movie guy, but I've seen bits and pieces of it. And you know that movies, dramatic, but they're always based on, or this was based on fact. And believe it or not, there was a old gentleman on the mountain. His name was Harry Truman. No, he was not President Harry Truman, but this gentleman, and he's like, I was born on this mountain, and I'm going to die on this mountain. Well, guess what? He died on the mountain, because mandatory does mean mandatory. Well, as time was going on, we started to take a look, and some things started to happen up there that were, crazy. The side of the mountain, and it was the face of the mountain, began to bulge out. Now, think about this. You're looking at a mountain, and the mountain is growing in size, and that's because of the pressure forcing the magma and the gases up, and it is now growing by about 3 feet. It's like got 3 feet wider and 3 feet wider and 3 feet wider. Well, Mount St. Helens on the top was just over 10,000 feet. And the day of reckoning, this is the day when it blew, and it was May 18th, 1980. It was crazy. The side of it blew off. There was an earthquake because, again, with these explosive volcanoes, you're going to get the earth to move. And there was a major earthquake that came on. That lava dome collapsed, and then all these volcanic gases shot out. And the amazing amount of gases, there were thousands of degrees. They came zipping down. I'm talking just the gases. Came zipping down the sides of the mountain, and there were forests all around there. And the forests were burnt by the gases because these gases were 1,000 degrees. Burnt. And if you ever see photos of it, Google the photos, it almost looks like if you ever had a wooden match and you watched it and you looked at it, it burned, it's burning and it burnt out, you blow it out and you look at it. It is amazing when you look at it that the gases there just sizzled, literally sizzled up all of the trees, and thousands of acres of forest were just like burnt. And that was from gases, no rock, no volcanic ash, none of the other things that we'll talk about. And as these streams of hot air went down there, burnt all that, well, on the top of the mountain, it was all glaciated. Now you had snow and ice. Glaciers are compacted snow. You had pieces the size of Volkswagens being launched off the side. And I hear getting hit in the head with those hurts a lot. So you needed to be careful. And then all of a sudden you had this volcanic ash coming out. and not just a little bit of ash. There were places in ash that were 30 feet, 40 feet thick of ash. I almost describe volcanic ash as when a volcano is sort of just about done, it coughs up this ash, and it's not always at the end. But it coughed up so much ash, the world's temperatures were lower by 2 degrees that year following this eruption, because what had happened was so much volcanic ash was in the air, it prevented the sun's rays coming through. There were towns, I guess, just east of it, and they had complete darkness for days because that's how much volcanic ash was in the air. And then they had so much torrential rain, like crazy, because in one of my shows, I talk about the hydrologic cycle, and I talk about to make a cloud, you need condensation nuclei, and volcanic ash is one of them. You need water vapor to cling on to something. Well, there was so much volcanic ash that they would just cling on to them. So you had that going off. And then all of a sudden, you had places that were covered in ash. You had the pieces of ice being launched. You had that superheated air. And they equated that this volcano going off, think about this. You know, we ended the World War, we dropped atomic bombs. They equated this as being 500 times the amount of power of atomic bombs that were dropped during near the end of World War II. So think about, you got all this going on, that amount of power, that mountain that was 10,000 feet. One side is still 10,000 feet. The other side is 8,000 feet. Think about this. 2,000 feet of the mountain blew off. Yeah, utterly amazing. So today we've covered, you know, okay, volcanoes. You learn a little bit about the quiet and explosive. And then I give the example, and again, it's the extreme example of Mount St. Helens. But you hear it go off, or you hear, obviously, the history of how it went off. And hopefully I was able to share with you today some great facts all about volcanoes. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure.
That was awesome.